Kina Yud Beis, every paragraph, every stanza begins with the word Ahali, my tent, which of course is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, which a few moments ago we said Kina Yud, which was also all about the Beis HaMikdash, its Kelim, the Mishmaros. One of the hardest parts probably of Tisha B'Av is trying to feel a deep sense of connection to the Beis HaMikdash. Think about the Holocaust, you think about other aspects of the Chorban. And it hits home in a different way, it's much closer. It affected us more directly. We've met people who've experienced the pain, who understand the implications for our families and for Klal Yisrael. But when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, when it comes to connecting to a building we never saw, to an experience we never had, it's very hard. It's very hard to appreciate it. It's hard to know what it is or what it was. One of my friends called me the other day from Chicago, and he said he was preparing a shiur, and he asked me. He said, "Well, you know, what can one say to try to help us to understand what the Beis HaMikdash was?" So I said, "The truth is, I don't know. I was never there either. I don't know. I don't really know what it was like. The experience of walking into the Beis HaMikdash." Seeing the Kohanim, seeing throngs of Jews coming to Leil HaRegel. But I thought of a mashal. Hashem gave me a mashal at the time, and I shared it with him, and I want to share it with you. Now imagine a person who's deathly ill. A person's very sick, and nothing seems to help. They've been to different doctors, different treatments, and nothing seems to have the cure. No one seems to have the answer. And then imagine one day, imagine he finds out one day that there's this medication that has the ability, not only has the ability, in the past it has proven that anyone with his particular illness, this medicine has a 100% success rate. That anyone who has this disease, if they could just get this medicine, all of the problems, all of his difficulties, all of his pain and agony would disappear. And then imagine if he found out that this medicine, this mysterious medicine, this well-documented but medicine that he's never seen, he's never experienced, he doesn't know what it looks like, he doesn't know how it's going to actually work within his body, but he knows that it works. He's been told that it's out there, it exists, the world has had it, people have been the recipient of its healing powers. Imagine if he finds out, does a little research, he looks into it, and he finds out that it was one of his relatives who actually first discovered this medicine. It was his great-great-grandfather who years ago had the scientific breakthrough to discover this medicine with its unique healing powers. And he feels, this is my family had this medicine, my family created this medicine, so to speak. This medicine exists in the world. Now again, this patient has never seen the medicine. Doesn't know what it looks like. He doesn't even know, is it taken orally? Does it have to be injected into his body? He doesn't know what the side effects are. He doesn't know anything about the medicine other than that it exists. And that once upon a time, his family had access to this medicine. And you can imagine that every waking moment of this person's life from that day forward is about that medicine. Is thinking about that medicine. His life depends upon it. His very survival depends upon that medicine. And to think that it was part of my family, that my great-great-grandfather was the one who discovered this medicine, he created this medicine. He can't stop thinking about it because he knows how valuable it is to him. I think that's what we should feel when we think about the Beis HaMikdash. We don't know exactly what it was, but we know that it works. And we know that it's part of our family. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this safe haven for the world. And that without the Beis HaMikdash, the world is literally crumbling. I want to just read a line, again from Revolbi, the great Mashgiach. Because when we think about Horem Beis HaMikdash, we're not just mourning the fact that a building fell, a building collapsed. There's no longer a Beis HaMikdash. Revolbi says, and he's not exaggerating, Chorban Beis HaMikdash hu Chorban Ha'olam. When the Beis HaMikdash fell, the world fell apart. It's not a mashal that people are sick, right? That the sickness, so to speak, is connected to Chorban Beis HaMikdash. There's a reality. There's a reality of what the world was like with the Beis HaMikdash, and how broken, how different the world is without the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Pinkus writes in one of his volumes on Galus and Geula, he says again, if the ikar of the life of a Jew, if the essence of the life of a Jew is kirbas elokus, is to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so where is the place that we learn how to feel close to Hashem? Where is the place where a Jew would go and he would really feel that he's standing in the makom of the Shechina, was the Beis HaMikdash? So if Pinkus writes, he says, so if that's the case, if there's no Beis HaMikdash, it's not just that we're missing a place to offer a karban, a place for Jews to get together. We're missing the place that teaches us how to live our lives in the most essential way possible. We're missing the essence of life itself without the Beis HaMikdash. And that's hard for us to feel. On a bad day, maybe we feel it a little bit, but on a good day, when everything seems okay, life's working out, and the person's not struggling so much. And the answer is, the problem is that we don't have the eyes to see what it means, a world without the Beis HaMikdash. We don't know. We've never experienced it. We didn't see how the world changed that day. There was a Chorban HaOlam. The whole universe underwent a transformation when that building crumbled and when that building fell. Tzaddikim have eyes to see. We'll talk later in the Arzi HaLevanon how important it is, the people who transmit Torah to us. But we don't have the eyes. We don't see the difference in a world of Galus as opposed to a world of Gula. We never saw that redeemed world. When Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev passed away, when the Holy Berditchev passed away, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who was nowhere near Rav Levi Yitzchak at that time, he turned to some of his students and he said, the sky just grew very dark. He said, the world just became a very dark place. The Berditchever must have passed away. The Kachav, and that's what it was, that's what happened. That a tzaddik has a certain eyes to recognize that there's a spiritual change that took place in the world. The world's never going to be the same place. But again, we don't have the eyes to see that. We come to the Bein HaMitzar and we change superficially. We change our outer practices. We change the way that we act during these days. But we don't really see the Chorban. We don't feel the Chorban in that way. Rav Pinchas Koritzer was a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. I saw in a little kuntris called the Avodas HaTzadikim. It says that Rav Pinchas Koritzer, during the 3 weeks, his whole house started to fall apart. It said that the clocks in his home would stop during the 3 weeks. Shabbos. The clocks on the wall stopped working. He says when they would prepare the challah for Shabbos during the 3 weeks, always something went wrong with the challah. The challah got burnt. The challah was undercooked. It was overcooked. Fell apart. Because again, for a tzaddik, the loss is very real. My wife was baking a cake on Erev Shabbos this week, so I told her, if the cake doesn't come out so good, you should just know it's a sign you're a very righteous woman. But to realize that the Chorban Beis HaMikdash is Chorban HaOlam, the whole world is crumbling, that anything that's not working out in our life is somehow connected back to Beis HaMikdash. A Jew came to the Apta Rav and said, Rebbe, a guy broke down, he was crying, tzaris. My ruchnias, my gashmias, my parnasa, shidduchim for my children. I can't pay my bills. He's going on and on. He's crying. The apter of the Oiv Yisrael. He's sitting there. He's crying with him. He feels so sad for this Jew. Like the tzaddikim are able to connect so deeply to feel someone else's pain. He's crying. And the guy finally finishes his whole list of everything that's wrong in his life and everything that's not working out and all the jobs he lost and all the health issues he has. The apter of in his tears, sobbing. He says, and also we didn't bring the carbon tumid today. And the fellow looks at him like he's out of his mind. And also we didn't bring the carbon tumid today. But again, for the tzaddik, he understood that if we would have brought the carbon tumid today, he'd have a different shot at getting that job. And that back pain that's been hampering you for weeks would maybe be a little less severe. To realize that the Beis HaMikdash is the place, is the medicine of all of Klal Yisrael. Medrash and Eicha tells, there was a woman who lost a young son. And she would sit every night and she would cry. And the Medrash describes Rabbi Gamliel, who lived nearby, he would hear her cries, he would hear her crying in the night. And when he heard her crying, he would remember the Chorban and he would start to cry as well. So the Sfarim asks, he hears a woman crying. Lav Dafka this time of the year. Here's a woman crying over a personal loss. You know, Gamliel would start to cry because he remembers the Churban. What's the pshat? So the Sfarim say, because Rabbi Gamliel understood that this woman's pain is connected to the Churban. That all of our suffering is connected to the Churban. That so many things, it's hard for us. Again, we don't have the eyes to see. We don't have the hearts to feel, but that's the reality. That's what Chazal are telling us. The things in the flat tire you got on the highway last week is connected to the Churban. And Rabbi Gamliel heard a woman crying over her personal loss. He said, this is also part of the Churban. This is also part of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Kuzari describes how life without the Beis HaMikdash is like a person trying to live without a head or without a heart. How many of us feel without a Beis HaMikdash? We don't have a head, we don't have a heart. It's this false perception that we have, that everything's okay, that things are okay, Klal Yisrael is doing okay. And Baruch Hashem, on some level you're right, we are doing okay. And that the world goes on, and Baruch Hashem, Jewish communities are flourishing, and Torah and Mitzvos is hopefully gaining steam and gaining speed, and people are interested, and there are Shiurim, and there are Minyanim, and there's so many good things that are happening in the world. But it creates a certain false perception that things are okay when things are really not okay. And that's what we're trying to sensitize ourselves to today. That it's really not okay. That, so to speak, the fuel that fuels the world, which is Torah and Mitzvos, is completely lacking. We're running on a very low tank. I was just thinking the other day, I was thinking about just the number of Mitzvos that we have today. Of the 613, 248 Mitzvos Aseh, 365 Los Aseh. How many of those Mitzvos do we have today? If we believe that Torah and Mitzvahs actually fuels the world and allows the world to continue to exist, so what percentage? Right? Would we be satisfied with this percentage in other arenas of our life if we were assessing our success? Chafetz Chaim wrote a little sefer called the Sefer Mitzvahs HaKatzar, where he enumerates those mitzvahs which apply b'zman hazeh. Of the 365 los aseh, how many do we have today? Without Eretz Yisrael the way it's supposed to be, without a Beis HaMikdash that's functioning the way that it's supposed to be. We have 194 mitzvos los aseh out of 365. It's about 53%. Mitzvos aseh, 248 mitzvos aseh. How many of them were you able to do in the ideal fashion today? Without a Yerushalayim, the way that it's supposed to be, without a Beis HaMikdash, the way that it's supposed to be. Of 248, it's shockingly low. 70, the Chafetz Chaim says 77 mitzvos, which is less than 30, it's about 31%. Which means the Sach HaKol of the 613 mitzvos, we've got 271, which comes to about 44%. Which means we're half dead. That means Klal Yisrael is half dead, the world is half dead. That half of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects for us is totally inaccessible to us. We have no access to it. I went online, I just wanted to see statistically. What percentage of a person, you know, his heart failure can one live with? If a person has 44% of the function of their liver, can they live? Can they survive? Certainly a very b'di'evit life, even if they can function on any level. And that's what the Kuzari is telling us, that without a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a head, we don't have a heart. Our vital organs are shutting down. The Beis HaMikdash in this kina that we're about to say, Ahali, my tent, my shelter. And the basic needs that are outlined, that have been discussed, the basic needs for living, food, clothing, shelter, one of the basic things a person needs to survive, to be considered alive, to have not a high level of living, but to be alive, is to have a home. Look at the Maharal and Netzach Yisrael in Perek Nun Beis, where he talks about the Beis HaMikdash as our home. Not as just Hashem's house, that our house, a place to call home, a place where we could feel comfortable. When Avram is told, Lech lecha me'artzecha, leave your home. The Medrash contrasts the two Lech lechas. There's the Lech lecha me'artzecha, and then the 10th Nisayon, the Akedah, Lech lecha eretz Hamoriah. And if you look at the Medrash carefully, the Medrash almost makes it sound like the Lech lecha me'artzecha is the primary Lech lecha. Oh yeah, and also Hashem asked Avram to kill Yitzchak, to have Akedah Yitzchak. To say that Lech lecha me'artzecha is a bigger nisayon than Lech lecha eretz Moriah, to go to the Akedah. But I saw the Kotzker's son, the Avos David, Rav David of Kotzk, says in a certain sense, yeah. In a certain sense, Avram having to pick himself up from his home because a home is so essential to a person feeling alive. The fact that Avram had to leave his home, the land that he knew, and it was a land that was very different, hashkafically, from the life he wanted to live. And yet the thought of a person having to wander aimlessly without a home is one of the most broken things that a person can experience. There's a doctor, a doctor in Boston, his name's Atul Gawande. He writes these medical books that are, I guess, Shovel Lechol Nefesh. Not a doctor, but I like to read his books. In 2014, he put out a book called Being Mortal. It's all about as life goes on, as a person grows older, and things that one has to grapple with, the challenges of life slowing down, losing one's strength. And he tells a story on page 67 about a fellow named Harry Truman, not the 33rd president. It's also called Harry Truman. Harry Randall Truman. Harry Randall Truman lost his life at age 83 because he refused to abandon his home. What was the story? Became a little bit of a hero at the time. In the 1980s, this Harry Truman, this fellow, lived in Washington State. And he lived in a mountainous area where there was tremendous concern. The scientists were concerned that there was going to be a volcanic explosion. And they told him, you got to get off the mountain. You have to leave your home. And this fellow said, this is my home. I love the mountain. And he was quoted as saying, if the mountain goes, I'm going with it. He wasn't convinced that there's going to be a volcanic explosion. For months, they tried to get him out of his home, and he refused to leave his home. He locked himself in his home, Harry Randall Truman and his 16 cats. And then in 1980, finally the mountain erupted, it exploded, and this fellow lost his life. And there's a tribute to him in that spot today. There was a certain, as tragic as it was, and as sick as this individual was, to not see the signs, to not get the warning, but he was a little bit of a hero because he was teaching people that there's an Indian called a home, there's a bias. And without my bias, I don't have a life, so I might as well stay here and risk it. That's, lahavdil, exactly what happened by the Chorban. Lauren Tanis says that at the time of the Chorban Bayis Rishon, the young Kohanim, they went up to the rooftops, they refused to obey, the building was burning, they went up to the rooftops, they took the keys to the Heichal, they threw them up to Shemaim, the Gemara says, Tanis Chavtes, and they said, Rabbono Shel Olam, you trusted us with these keys, but it's clear that we can't be trusted, and now the keys are being given back to you. And so to speak, the Gemara says, a hand reached out from the heaven and took the keys, whatever exactly that means, hard for us to understand. And then the Gemara says, the young Kohanim, who refused to abandon their bias because they understood this is our home, and life outside this home is not even life, they jumped into the flames. So of course, being people so far away from that experience, and being the people that we are, who hardly know how to feel anything, being overly rational and not sympathetic to these Kohanim who jumped into the flames, immediately we get so from and we start thinking, oh, but they're not allowed to commit suicide, how could they do that? And we think like a halachist, like a rationalist. And we start to say, how could they jump into the flames? What's the heter to jump into the flames? That's missing the point. The fact that we would even, part of our minds, I'm sure some of us, you hear that Gemara, the first thing you think of, how could they jump into the flames? And the Gemara deals with it. There's Dasa Kanim and Bereshis that deals with it. In Ksuvis, the Gemara tells a similar story. The Gemara says that when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi passed away, it was so tragic. There was a certain laundryman in the town that when he heard of the death of the tzaddik, when he heard Rabbi Yehuda Anasi passed away, this fellow went up to his rooftop and he fell, quote unquote, he fell to his death. So again, the question is, we're very sad, the loss of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, but what right do you have to jump off the roof? So take a look at the Yaivitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden on that Gemara, Ksuvis Kof Gimel. It says a very powerful thing. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, he didn't jump off the roof. The Gemara's language is precise, he fell off the roof. He was so distraught at the loss of Yehuda Anasi that he literally went out of his mind. He didn't know what to do with himself. He didn't know where he was. He was roaming around just trying to make sense of the tragedy until he literally walked off the roof without even realizing it. That's what happened to these Kohanim. They're not held accountable for committing suicide, for giving up. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the whole world crumbled. There was no life. It wasn't a conscious decision to throw themselves into the flames. They realize without a Beis HaMikdash, the world can't go on. There's nothing left. There's literally nothing left. And what choice did they have? And they fell into the flames. They fell into the flames. I just want to give you a mashal. You know, when a child is born, we had this experience the other day, our 17-month-old Yaakov. He climbs a lot, but he doesn't talk very much. And the other day, like almost so strange, all of a sudden, he like discovered how to say mommy. He hasn't really said it much since, but it was one evening, we were putting the kids to sleep, and I said, Yaakov, say mommy. And all of a sudden he says, mommy, mama, mommy, mama. I quickly grab my phone, get a video, I'll capture this moment. My wife was nearly in tears, and he himself was like shocked. Like, I figured it out. They kept saying, mommy, mama, mommy, mama. And there's such a joy when a child is developing, when a child takes the first step, when a child says their first word, when a child is able to do certain things, there's such a feeling of like, wow, that's so proud, it's so exciting. Contrast that, Rahman al-Tzlan, with a person who, God forbid, has a stroke. Imagine a person has a stroke. Nebuch, initially they're paralyzed, they've lost their ability to speak. And now, Baruch Hashem, as time goes on, they're healing, therapies, treatments, and they're beginning to speak again. They're beginning to talk again. That's also very exciting. Baruch Hashem, they can speak again. But it's Nebuch. It's not like the child who's figuring out how to speak for the first time, where the parents are filled with joy. The fellow starts to walk again. Again, there's a simcha. There's an element of simcha. The person is recovering from their stroke. But there's a rachmanis. You feel Nebuch. I want to put that in a Beis HaMikdash context. The Rav used to say the two greatest nights, or Soloveitchik would say the two greatest nights in the calendar year, the most exalted nights in my experiential religious experience. He says, not my intellectual experience, but in my experiential connection to Yiddishkeit. The Rav said the two nights that stand out are Yom Kippur, the Kol Nidre, and the Leil HaSeder. And I'm sure many of us feel the same way. That these nights, they're so precious. Yom Kippur. They sit by the Seder. Let me give you a mashal. Imagine if you will, that there was a harsh government decree, a gezerah was issued, that you're no longer allowed to keep the Pesach Seder. And anyone caught keeping the Pesach Seder is going to be put to death. Okay. So people who for generations have kept the Pesach Seder, looked forward to it every year, it was a part of transmitting emunah to their children, and now it's taken away. So they decide, we have to do something, we have to teach our children something, we have to hang on to something. They decide, let's make a zecher. This much they're able to get away with. We'll make a zecher to Pesach. We'll teach our children every year, instead of four cups of wine, well, we'll drink a glass of wine. Right? We're not allowed to tell the story, so we won't tell the whole story. We're not allowed to eat matzah on pains of death if we get caught with matzah. So we'll eat crackers instead. Right? We'll do things that are like loosely related to what once was. And the kids, over time, start to look forward to that. The children are looking forward to it. Every year comes around. Oh, this is the night where we drink a cup of wine and have crackers. Right? And the older generation thinks, Nebuch, this is what my child thinks Pesach is. My child's growing up thinking, this is Pesach. And they're satisfied with that. They think, this is Pesach, this is great. It's literally the exact same thing, if you think about it, our Pesach versus Pesach with the Beis HaMikdash. How does a person who saw the Beis HaMikdash look at our Pesach? We think it's so great. We come, we have our kittel, and the table is set so beautifully, and kadesh, and orchatz, karpas, yachatz. We got it to levincha, and the matzah, and arbakosos, and a seba, and halel, and hopefully plenty of singing, and if we're really good, some dancing, and a little shir hashirim at the end. And we're thinking, oh, this is a Pesach. Nebuch, that gezerah, they're eating a cracker and a cup of wine. And a Jew from the Beis HaMikdash looks at us and says, what are you talking about? That's the Pesach. Where's your chabura? Where's your karban Pesach? Where's Yerushalayim? Where are the throngs of Jews? Where are the Kohanim? Up to their knees in the blood of the karban Pesach and the recitation of Halal. Right? Whereas, like the Gemara says, a kazayas of karban Pesach and the roofs were flying off. They were saying Halal with such excitement. The roofs of the house were ready to burst. That's not Pesach. Yom Kippur. We love Yom Kippur. Think about Yom Kippur, it's a Kol Nidre, and the Ila, the Tfilos, the Nusach, the Nugunim. Again, to us, that's Yom Kippur. But try for a second to put it in a Beis HaMikdash context. Some of the Beis HaMikdash laughs at us. You think this is, you're alive? This is Yom Kippur. Where's your Sar La Zazil? Where's your Sar La Hashem? Where's your Kohen Gadol? Where's Kodesh Kadashim? Where's Ketores? Where's the red thread turning white? This is Yom Kippur. And that's what we're mourning when we talk about the Beis HaMikdash. We're thinking about what once was. Again, we don't really know what it was, like the mashal I started with, that medicine that we've never seen. But we have to believe the way that Tzaddikim are telling us that if we had this, it would be very different. As joyous as our Yom Kippur is, as joyous as our Seder is, as great as the 44% of mitzvot that we have left are, but it's still only 44%. There's a Ksav Sofer in Bayigash. Ksav Sofer says that when Yosef and the brothers are reunited, the Medrash says, "Kishem shelo pies Yosef la'achiv elu b'bichia." The same way that Yosef and the brothers only came to appeasement through crying, "Kain eino goel es Yisrael elu b'bichia." When Mashiach comes and we have the Beis HaMikdash, the Geula is going to come about with a lot of tears. And the way the Chassav Sofer explains, it's not tears that we cry leading up to the rebuilding, and it's not only tears of joy. What are the sad tears we're going to cry when we see the Beis HaMikdash once again? He says, "Ki ba'orech ha'galus, me'efes hergish heder ha'tova shayalanu." We got so used to galus, we thought Pesach was Pesach. And we thought Yom Kippur was Yom Kippur. And then suddenly the Geula is going to come, and we're going to realize, hold on a second. Everything that we thought that we had, and Baruch Hashem, we have to be thankful for all that we have. But everything that we envisioned was fine in our life. Because of the shechicha mitzuya banu, he says. Because of the forgetfulness, which is commonplace. The ein anu yodim chesroneinu. We don't even realize what we're lacking. Ein anu bochem kol kach al chesroneinu. So we don't even know what to cry for. Because we feel like we have it good. We have enough restaurants, we have enough minyanim, we have enough shirim. It's not so bad. Eretz Yisrael is rebuilding itself. Aval, kishenashuv la'artzeinu az nira ba'ayin ma'chasarnu kol eila hashanim. But when the Geula comes, we're going to really cry because we're going to realize, how on earth are we so complacent? How are we so easily satisfied with 44% of the mitzvahs of the 613? How did it not bother us? When we sang L'shon Abba Yerushalayim at Pesach, right, that there was a part of us that said, nah, L'shon Abba and Tinek's also okay. V'oz teiradna einenu dima v'afafenu yizlu mayim. And then we're really going to cry. And these were the tears that Yosef cried. Because let's think about it. Yosef in Mitzrayim, not bad. Stayed from. He raised two children, Ephraim and Menashe. They were tzaddikim. Torah tells us, Ephraim and Menashe, keruvein v'shimon yiyuli. Yosef made it in Galus, so to speak. But when he saw the Shvatim, when he saw his brothers, when he saw what could be, when he saw what he lost out on by not living in the house of Yaakov Avinu, then it really clicked and Yosef began to cry. So Mir Tzashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us. As we recite this Kina Ahali, my tent, my home, to realize that a Jew without a home is not a full Jew. And if only we could get back to Beis HaMikdash. If only we can get back to Beis HaMikdash. If only one of the first halachos in Shulchan Aruch resonated with us. And I'll end with this. One of the first halachos in Shulchan Aruch. Halacha says, "Ro'oi l'chol yari shemayim li'os meitzer v'doeg al chorban Beis HaMikdash." If we're God-fearing Jews, which we certainly hope to be, if we're God-fearing Jews, it's fitting for a God-fearing Jew, one of the first halachos, Simen Aleph, in the Shulchan Aruch, to be meitzer v'doeg al chorban Beis HaMikdash, to be pained over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. And channel your own pain towards that. Come to the realization that yes, the job that didn't work out has something to do with Beis HaMikdash. And yes, the shidduch that didn't work out has something to do with Beis HaMikdash. And to cry, and to feel that if I want to be a God-fearing Jew, I have to know about the chorban. And what if, God forbid, it doesn't bother me? And I'll end with this. The Chiddush HaArim, the first Ger Rebbe, wrote a sefer called Sefer HaZchus. And he quotes this halacha and he says, if a God-fearing Jew has to cry over the Beis HaMikdash, all the more so. Kol shekein mi she'eino yari shemayim lamito. A person who says, I'm not so God-fearing, well, all the more so you need to cry over the Beis HaMikdash. Because maybe the reason you're not so God-fearing is because you never stepped inside the Beis HaMikdash. And if a person says the Chiddush HaRim, will appease himself and say, maybe I don't feel the pain because I'm so connected to Klal Yisrael. He says, don't deceive yourself. He says, if you're so disconnected that you can't even carve the Beis HaMikdash, he says that's a sign that you have even bigger problems. If the Beis HaMikdash doesn't mean anything to you, it's not because you're on such a high level that you're able to see past it and to see beyond it. It's because you're so broken that you don't even realize what's lacking in our lives. So Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take these tefillos. We should all be zocha once again to see that Ohel, to see the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, and to see the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. Kina Yud Beis. Ali Asher Ta'afta Ad Lo Bereshis Kisei Chavod Tzarfo Lama Lanetzach Shudad B'yad Shodidim Niyesa Karoa Ba'otiyah V'rashita V'raganta V'ata Ma'lifo Ali Asher